Welcome back to the podcast, you beautiful soul. I've got an absolute legend with me today as a guest, the branding sensei himself. I've got Matt Purcell, Australia's leading personal branding expert and the founder of Australia's only verbal self-defense program, Social Kung Fu, which I really look forward to hearing about. He is on a mission to help doers think and thinkers do. Again, I'd love to hear a little bit more about that. I had the absolute pleasure of hearing this man speak live in person up on the Gold Coast when he did a speaking presentation. Matt, thank you for joining me today, my man.
No worries. Thanks for having me, bro.
Man, look, I saw you with One Life Club. That's where I guess I got brought into your world and I jumped down your rabbit holes and checked out your content. Love what it is that you do. And for myself as well, because I don't know your full story, and for my listeners that are listening, what's the story of yourself? Who's Matt? How have you been able to become who you are today and create the success that you have today?
Yeah, well, I'd say I have Australian hardware. No, I've got Asian hardware, but Australian software. That's what Beautiful. I say straight up, because if you're just listening to this and you can't see me, I'm actually a Korean man.
Beautiful.
With a moustache. It took me 9 years to grow.
Very proud, man.
Korean hardware. It's very hard to grow facial. It's very hard to grow any hair at all. And so the reason why I don't sound Korean, but I look it, is because I was adopted as a kid. And I was adopted as a four-month-old baby by two Caucasian Australian parents. And I grew up in the city of Newcastle, which is more of like a big country town.
Yeah.
And I swear people would have saw me and my parents walking down the street and thought, are you okay, little boy? Have you been kidnapped? Like, it was not a common picture.
Yeah.
Being adopted in a big city. So I came from that background and it didn't bother me at all, really, until my parents split up when I was six. And that was a messy split. It's probably one of my first memories as a kid, unfortunately. And I remember seeing mum struggle. She had the envelope system, where she would get the money out of the ATM and put it in certain envelopes. And I remember we got robbed one time and we couldn't afford stuff that week. So it was instilled a lot of fear in me as a young kid to never, I just crave security. And at the same time, I was bullied going to a new school. Mum dropped me off at this bus stop and I'd walk onto the bus and be the new punching bag from several year seven students as a year one student. And I did everything I could to be able to fight them off. And then they dumped me in a whiz bin one day, like multiple times. And I hid it from my parents because I didn't want to, you know, like appear weak. That's what it was like back then. And I then was put into martial arts to be able to try and protect myself. And I realized quickly that that didn't really help, because all the bullying became verbal. And when someone would call me a name or trigger me, I just would whack him in the face and I'd get in trouble with parents, the principal and the police eventually. So I just realized then that there was no inner work or inner training to help me through those tough times that you can't control. So that was Matt back when he was like 6 years old, 8 years old, where wow. I started.
Man, that's a incredible story. I'd love to we'll circle back to that. I'd love to continue your story up to where you are today, but man, there's some gold in there, which I'll circle back to. But man, keep going. So you've gone through some challenging upbringings. I didn't realize you were adopted as well. I'd love to hear a little bit more about that and how that shaped you. Had some pain around money, had some pain around security, had pain around bullying, around verbal bullying as well. That's probably what I would assume ties into the social kung fu, which we can get into soon. From there, man, how did your journey continue and transpire into today?
Well, my adoption didn't bother me until really my parents separated. I was bullied and went to a new school. And then I started thinking very deeply as a young kid about identity and who I am and why am I so different? And I got very deep very early on in my life, and I craved answers and I craved confidence. So I would gravitate toward confident people. I gravitate toward older people. I'd often be sitting with year six students instead of year one students. I'd often be hanging around elderly and picking their brains as a kid. And people be like, what are you doing here, little boy? I'm like, I just want to learn so I can avoid all this pain.
Yeah.
And I was given a guitar when I was young, around, I think I was about 10. And that was the first healthy outlet, without punching people and trying to play sport as healthy outlets. It was the first creative outlet I had to be able to express myself and to experiment and to, I don't know, escape. And that really helped me. I really realized that I had a gift. And the gift was I could learn creativity, like in the arts and with movies and a whole bunch of, I knew how to be able to, I recognized patterns and pulled it together very quickly and became very good quicker than anyone I knew. And so much so that I started playing session music with recording artists and things like that when I was 14, 15. And that was actually started as a musician, as a trade. And literally I know that all of that would help me get to where I am today, because as a musician, it's probably the hardest, up there with being an original artist, like drawing and painting, selling your paintings. My God, original art is probably, you got to be one tough son of a bitch to be able to go in that industry, because you have to pitch, you have to justify your value, you have to compete with other people who may offer certain things the same as you. And it really comes down to just slight intricacies of if they like you more than someone else. And if you're in the right places most frequently. And I'll never forget one lesson. It is like a life lesson. You learn life lessons along the way, not from textbooks, but from just people treating you a certain way. I remember I never had a real job ever in my whole life. I didn't work at McDonald's or Hungry Jack's, anything like that. My first gig was actually teaching my English teacher guitar for $20 cash in year nine. And it turned into 4 students and then 10 students and 20 students in, I was in year nine earning all this cash. And Asians like two things. They're like cats and cash. No, I'm just joking. And I remember I was playing gigs at local little cafes and pubs if my dad would attend. And I remember just getting really ticked off when no one was there. And I'd just be playing to the bar staff or the cafe staff. And I remember just coming home one day and really frustrated. And my dad noticed. And I just said, what's the point? Like, no one's there listening. Why should I even try very hard? And he's like, that's the wrong way to think about it. You just never know who's watching you. You never know what time or what hour someone could see you.
Yeah.
You never know where it could lead. So treat it as if you're playing in front of a stadium.
Wow.
And never be lazy ass. And I'm like, okay. So I did that for a couple of weeks. And I got a call 2 weeks after that one day. And from this guy saying, hey, listen, I heard you play at some cafe. Would you like to play at our Westfield opening for a whole week straight? We'll pay you a grand. And I was like, you know, a teenager. And I'm like, yes. And he was just one dude who got a coffee, stopped and heard part of a song. No one was there and walked away, got my details and called me. And that, those little lessons there of being seen to be heard to be chosen across all industries and all life, you have to be in it to, you have to be seen to be heard to be chosen. And I learned so much through music and having the hustle and having to do the hard work there. So started as a musician and then it just keeps evolving, man.
Yeah,
it just kept evolving.
So many, man, I've never obviously had a conversation with you in this level of depth, and you've got so much depth to you. You've got so much wisdom to you. You speak so elegantly about, I guess, the, like you said, you were quite a deep thinker from quite early on, which is really, really awesome. If you're okay going there, I'd love to know from someone who's gone through some challenges with your upbringing, from the money challenges with parents splitting, bullying as well. I really, really resonate with that. It was a really big pain point for me, just like struggle with friends, struggle with bullying. I used to spend a lot of time by myself in solitude, just deep thinking and hanging out with older people as well. I used to be like friends with all the teachers at school. I would literally go hang out with the teachers and to talk with them at lunchtime. But I'd love to know from you, man, what were some of those really life lessons for you experiencing the pain of the money with your family growing up and the pain of the bullying? What were some of those lessons that have really shaped you?
I think sometimes not having something, sometimes not having a lot of something is the thing that makes you think out of the box to go get it. You know, like, so I remember in year eight, my mum couldn't afford to send me to camp. It was like $120. I took the note home and she said, I can't afford it. I'm like, what are you joking? Like, it's $100. Like, we don't have the money. And I said, I'll mow the lawns. I'll do whatever I can. She's like, I don't have any money to pay you. I'm like, oh, duh. Yeah. So I was just thinking one night going, there's got to be a way. I just cannot believe that money is going to be a barrier for me to go to camp. So I was year eight. So I thought, you know what? I'm just going to be honest. I'm going to go to the school principal and tell him. So I booked a meeting at the office. I said, listen, I need to see the principal today. And she's like, what happened? Like, I just need to speak to him ASAP. It's important. And I somehow got a meeting with the principal. I said, listen, I don't want to waste any of your time, but like, I can't afford to come to camp. Can we do a payment plan or something?
Yeah.
And he's like, this is quite mature for a year eight student. And he said, listen, let me get back to you. He called my mum up and he told me what was going on. And then we both had a meeting with, he had a meeting with both me and my mum. And he said, listen, Matt, we know your situation. What would you be willing to do? I said, well, I'll wash the science blocks. I'll wash the toilets. If I did that for a week, would that cover the fee? And he thought about it and he was taken back. He's like, yep. If you do that for a week, you've got your ticket to camp.
How good is that?
So I negotiated my way into camp and I earned my way into camp. And it was one of the best damn camps I've ever had because it was an all boys camp. We learned how to make fires, go in a tent, cook our own food. And it was really, really, what that was the first time I think that I was faced with something I wanted that I was told I couldn't have, that I made happen. And that was the mindset of, that's a mindset of a founder, I think. It's a mindset of creativity as well. It's like, just because someone says no in business doesn't mean that, it's like, if there's no money, I'll find a way. Like, it's an attitude I've always had. Like, don't tell me no. If it's no, it's a not yet, or let's explore four other options.
Yeah.
So I've got to say, if you had to ask anybody on the street or anyone in Australia even, hey, what would a person have to go through to make them an intelligent, wise, resilient person? Would you put them through an easy course? Would you give them everything like light? They'd say no. So I in a way, my hardships, I mean, there's people that are worse off than us, but for me, I look back now and we're like, you know what? That's like the level in the game that is a little difficult. And I could keep playing the level that I can do all the time and just blame the game. But like, it was good. Like, I'm really thankful for all those challenges now. So like, that's an example of that. I mean, I remember seeing mum I remember coming home to mum and saying, hey, everyone's got new shoes. I don't have these skate shoes. And she'd be like, I can't afford them for 6 weeks. Like, so I had to learn how to wait. And then I'd bounce between her house and my dad's house, and my dad would have wealth. My mum didn't have it. And so I was between two universes of, you can do whatever you want, stay at wherever you want with my dad. And then what mum was like, it's strict. We've got to stick to a routine. And that was good for me in the long run. But as a kid, you're just like, oh, it was a bit of a struggle.
Man, so much depth, man. This is beautiful. I didn't think we were going here straight away, but we're here right now. So this is beautiful to sort of maybe go a little bit deeper again. What is something that you spend a lot of time thinking about, but you don't talk about very often?
I think about identity a lot.
Mm. Expand on that.
I think a lot about what people think they are versus who they really are.
Mm.
We give labels to everything. We crave labels. So what do you do? So what are you single? Are you married? Are you like, we're just constantly wanting a status update. Yeah. We're like status driven human beings. Like, we want an update on everything. And if you peel back the layers of the onion, really, who the hell are you? What makes you who you are? And you could peel away your career and your income. I mean, just look at it in the West. You're just like, okay, I type in a celebrity or a person of stature. And one of the suggested things will be so-and-so net worth.
Yeah.
So it's connected to some type of metric.
Yeah.
And that's just a culture we're growing up to it. But I've always been obsessed with the questions like, you, maybe who you are isn't as constructed as you think. Maybe we've been conditioned to think that we are a certain person because if you have this, this, and this, and this, then you are a person.
Yep.
The framework that we live in is what do I have to do to have then to be? So as a human, Matt, what does Matt have to do as a job to actually have to show for something, to achieve something? Then I can be a certain person. That's bullshit. That's one of the most warped. That's why no wonder we have a culture of burnout, and no wonder we have a culture of status driven people. So it's all about, what do I do? How do I do this, Matt? How do I do this, Lewis? Tell me what I need to do. It's like, how about we swapped it to, who do you need to be?
Yeah.
And I lived in a country town, like in Newcastle. It's a big country town. And sometimes your area code shrinks your dreams. Sometimes there are people in your circle that you're just limited to what you believe is possible.
Yeah.
And I just think that's a be question, not a how question or have question.
Yeah.
So I think about that a lot. I think about, really, if most of the stuff that we feel like we need to do is driven by someone else's scorecard.
Mm.
And most people haven't even set up their own scorecard. And there's not many metrics to a human scorecard. You need good wealth, health, and relationships.
Yeah.
And that's all underpinned by values and beliefs. And they're all invisible inner work stuff. All the other stuff you can measure really quickly. I need some money. But as if money... See, here's the thing, like, money doesn't change who you are. Money is an external resource, and it's an intangible asset too. Like, what is money? It's a digit now. It's an intangible asset, it's an external resource. And if you've got trauma or you've got issues with yourself, that's an internal issue. How can an external thing fix an internal thing? How can you say this amount of resource will change my trauma? No, it just makes you $1 million insecure person. It doesn't change the inner status of who you are. Like, there's the car that's all shiny, but if the engine under the hood's bad, then that's not, you can make the exterior, it's external versus internal right there. The engine's the internal, and the external is what people see of you. And we're obsessed with the external. What if we just worked, I've got bad sounds coming out of the car. Let's just fix the external exterior, fix itself. Nah, it's bull crap. That's like a recipe for mental illness. Yeah. So that's what I think about a lot.
It's beautiful, man. You're really, really my alley, man. That's I guess I work with people to help them be more quote successful in quotations, which is generally the external, money, business, whatever. But generally, it's the internal. And Tony Robbins says it really well. It's the science of achievement, but the art of fulfillment. And it's the science is very numbers, facts, figures, marketing, sales, whatever, bank account figures versus like, what's the fulfillment? And that's individual, right? Like, what are your values? What do you love? What lights you up? Nothing external is ever going to change who you are internally, is exactly what you're saying. I think maybe a bit of a balance question with that. How do you personally, as a founder, as an entrepreneur, as a businessman, how do you balance that with, I guess, building a real business that, because you can't pay your rent with love, trust, and pixie dust. You can't say, I'm a good person. Can I not pay rent this week? So how do you balance that, I guess, the hustle culture, which you were referring to, the burnout culture, with actually being a good fucking human being? How do you balance
that? Yeah. I don't believe in balance. I believe in seasons and cycles. If you're trying to balance everything out, I think people think balance needs to be an equal distribution of 8 hours a day or whatever that is. And I just think if you look at anyone who's reached their potential, from an athlete or business person or someone who we're really thankful for who has discovered something, they weren't balanced to get there. But I would say that seasons is a much better framework, because there are seasons to work hard till 2 a.m. Seasons are marked by two things, in my view. They have a start and they have an end. If you are hustling 24/7 for 10 years or for the rest of your life, you're not in a season. if it's hot all the time, it's not a season of summer. You live in the goddamn desert. So yeah. I think if you balance it out, balance is about seasons. And Erin Deering talks about this a lot, where she talks about there's 4 cycles to business.
Yep.
One is pre-launch. When you're doing pre-launch, it's like, hey, Lewis, let's just get everything on the whiteboard. Let's look at all the possibilities. Let's go and to the beach. Let's go to a cabin. Let's go and draw up plans and things like that. That's one season. Second season is launch time. That's when your product's in the market and you're going to town. Like, this is like, shit, we have to really hustle. This is a 2 a.m. hustle thing, or 12 p.m., whatever it takes. then the third season is steady the ship. So there's a cooling off period in this cycle, and you need to get your ducks all lined up for the last season, which is rest and review. So it's like, what do we learn from that? How can we improve? Look at the data, look at all the game footage, all the playing footage, and go back into pre-launch again. And I think it's happened for millions of years with seasons. You can't change the seasons, but you can change yourself.
What season are you in right now?
Sorry?
What season are you in right now?
I'm in Steady the Ship.
Okay.
I'm Steady the Ship. I've had a lot of projects in the oven, and we've been hustling pretty hard, and we're just like lining up the ducks right now going, oh, wow, let's prepare for cool off. And rest is coming in the next quarter. So looking forward to it.
Beautiful, man. Looking forward to seeing it. This might tie into your story, but you used the word identity a couple of times and confidence, and you said that was painful for you with bullying and your upbringing. How does that tie into, and has that had an influence in you getting into the branding world? Because I can see identity and confidence and branding kind of tying into each other. Maybe for some people, it can be an overcompensation. It kind of maybe the external, right? You see the people who are really insecure with how they look and how they are as their self-worth as a person. So they have all these nice flashy things to overcompensate for it. And some people go the other direction with that. I'd like to know for you, like, how is that? Has it been a link either that you're aware of, maybe until this conversation? And how does that tie into, I guess, branding as a whole, the identity and the confidence from your upbringing?
When I was a session musician, I noticed a couple of things. One was there are heaps of session musicians. There were stacks of guitarists like me, and they were all pretty much the same level of ability. Some were some were obviously not as good. Some were actually good. So you can have these. You have that as a parent. So to be able to get a gig, the second thing I saw as on top of that is that there are limited slots for the key positions you want to be in. There are only certain bands, only a certain amount of guitarists that can be in a band. So when you have an overdistribution of session guitarists and a limited supply of slots for bands, and they're all pretty much can do the same job, how do you make yourself get chosen? And that's what I found myself in very early on in my life. I'm like, this has got very little to do with my ability when I get to a certain point. I have to be able to earn the right to be able to be in the band. And I have to earn a relationship to be likable and trusted. So there was two points here. There was like relevance and credibility. That's how I've come up with these two things, is that I needed to be credible, meaning I had to have the skills to pay the bills. I had to be able to pay my dues and to be able to go, I need to show on what stages I've been on. And that could be case studies for businesses. What case studies can you show me that prove to me that you can get the job done? And for some people listening to this, it might be like, I don't have a lot to show for the knowledge I have.
Yeah.
And that's actually a real problem. You need to measure out your knowledge with actual evidence for it, because information's cheap now. So I knew that although I've got the skills to show for it, I need proof to be able to give confidence. So stages were it. But also the human side of it, you really got to be relevant, updated, fresh, something that you can actually bring apart from just getting the job done. But you got to bring the attitude. You got to be a good, easy person to work with. And I found that people would choose me in my career for various things over others because, you know what, I like Matt. Matt has a good belief. Matt have a good, because you can't just hire a hand. A whole person has to come with it.
I
believe in that so much when people are going, okay, how do I choose someone over them with all these agencies here, with all these accountants here, with all the bodybuilders and the finalists, they all literally look identical, but just one or two things that really make you just go, okay, I'm going to choose him over them. Yeah. So for me, that has been principle of branding. Some people really hate branding. Some people really don't rate branding. They're like, branding's a waste of money. Branding's a waste of time. All you need is a good offer and some advertising. For those people who say that, I think you're full of crap, because you are basically saying you need to have an offer and advertising, and you're just selling t-shirts with no soul.
Yeah.
There's nothing memorable about your business.
Yeah.
And you'll look at Audi, who invested millions of dollars in having Tony Stark drive a car, and go like, what's the ROI on that? Like, that's so dumb. What return on investment you're going to get for putting Robert Downey Jr. in a car? And I think it was like ridiculous amount of money. I think Marvel paid $300 million to be the car of Marvel's choice. And they've earned $3 billion back in avatar in exposure revenue, meaning that is a long-term investment. Because how many years ago was Iron Man? 10 years ago, nearly now. And he's forever driving an Audi, forever, right? And you can't say that. I mean, the big brands invest in branding because it makes you memorable. And without memorability, you're just a t-shirt. You're just a car. You're just a box with four wheels.
Yeah.
So I think branding for a human being is going, okay, it's the personality, it's the beliefs, it's the values that align. I can trust you. You make your story, no story, no glory. I say, if you have no story, you have no glory. If you have no story, you're boring.
Hmm.
Yeah. So if you take, if you had a trinity, a triangle here, one's branding, one's an offer, and one's advertising. You take branding away, you're just selling a box with wheels, which we call a car. Wow. But you add branding there, it's like it's a Hyundai, the Ferrari, it's a lifestyle.
It's beautifully put, man. Really, really beautifully put. I'd love to know for you, what's your system, recipe, ingredients for you that go into a good personal brand? Like you said, there's an offer, there's a story. Is there, I guess, other ingredients that come to for you when it looks for like a great brand who's like on brand, making a difference, making themselves memorable, and then people that just get forgotten about and they're kind of like the what they call the blue ocean and red ocean strategy. They're part of the blue ocean. They get lost. Oh, sorry, red ocean. So yeah, what's your ingredients or recipe for a good personal brand?
A good personal brand has five P's. And the first P is you got to have a good pitch. Pitch involves understanding your story, crafting a story, crafting a persona, understanding who you are and who you're not as an individual. So for me, I'm not an athlete. I'm not going to pretend to be an athlete. I have a great example of Batman. Batman has an origin story and he has key moments in his timeline where it made him who from Bruce Wayne to Batman. And I've shared a little bit on this podcast already, adopted, bullied, you know, and then I later mentored through creativity and things like that, which helped me get onto my path. And we all have that type of storyline. A lot of people say, oh, I'm boring, but if you haven't done the work, you can't say you're boring yet. You're choosing to be boring by not doing the work. It's just a lazy man's excuse. Everyone has a good story. And that's the most uncopyable part about who you are. I can copy your visual image. I can buy your clothes. I can buy your car. I can buy the things I see on you, but I can't get your story. I'd have to go through the exact same things you went through and I might respond differently. So you've got to start with pitch, which is know your story. It makes sense then. Where are you heading as a character? What is this character's weaknesses? What are their like visual attributes? Where did they come from? You know, who are their villains? That is like crafting a character.
Yep.
And then you need to build up from that to publish. You need to publish about something. You need to write things. You need to do videos. It can come in many forms, publishing. But from the dawn of time, I mean, even the Bible is a publishment. Like people publish stories about that, you know, like it's embodying a message. And that's part of pitch too, is you've got to have a message of heaven and hell. You've got to have a message of this is why you should listen. There is a gain here and there's a hell to avoid. And we want to publish about that so that that's what value is to an audience, is you help them steer toward their goal and avoid danger. And then from the P above that, it's you need to productize so you can create an offer. So it might be a workshop. It might be an ebook. It might be something that is IP related, generally speaking, or a product that supports this audience that you have identified and they've aligned with you. And the fourth one is build a profile so that you can become an authority in your space. And the fifth part is partnerships. So I've seen The Rock, Conor McGregor, even Aussies as well, get to this fifth P because I've done all the P's and they've been able to attract incredible partnerships in other businesses, with charities, with other individuals, and that's the aim of the game.
Beautiful, man. Man, there's so much depth we could go on each of those, but obviously I'm very conscious of time. And we haven't gone into the social kung fu, and that's something that's really curious to me because, again, bullying's a part of my story and a part of my journey, and I actually don't know what it is. So please enlighten me and my listeners. What is social kung fu?
Yeah, research has shown the most common form of abuse isn't kicks or punches. It's actually words. It's actually verbal abuse. And when we saw Will Smith slap Chris Rock at the Grammys last year, he responded with physical violence to a verbal dig. And there are Krav Maga, there's UFC, there's boxing for self-defense physically, but there's nothing that he tells you how to do a verbal block or to deflect or to be able to do anything other than avoid or attack. And social kung fu is Australia's first verbal self-defense training. So it involves talking and texting.
Yep.
And it's being researched by the University of Sydney right now. So by this time next year, it will be the first evidence-based program in Australia that touches on these frameworks.
That's awesome.
And I came up with this. I mean, my story shows it. Like, I was physically bullied and verbally abused. And I had only physical answers, solutions to that. And as I was teaching guitar, that turned into mentoring because I'm interested in humans. I love people. And they'd share things that, like suicide ideation to me, or they saw their mum get abused physically by their partner. And I'm like, I'm out of my depth here. I've got to report this stuff. I had to report various things from kids just being so like, I trust you, Matt. And I got some qualifications in mental health and spent time with young people over the years, hearing their stories, helping them out, developing programs. I had a youth center that had three campuses that I sold not long ago, about 3 years ago, and helped 600 families a week with mentoring, music tuition, academic tuition, and the EIS provider. And from all of that, being exposed to the needs and the needs of young people and families, that's where social kung fu was born and birthed. So basically what social kung fu is, it's a platform which gives schools access to 9 belts, 9 modules, and I'm on there educating. There's worksheets through there that are and quizzes which will be quantifiable, and then we're releasing a parent one so that parents that are bullied or parents that have a kid who's being bullied can then coach their kid on that too. So there's a B2B model, which is to schools in Australia, which we want to reach 1 million students, and then there's a B2C model, which is just helping everyday families bully-proof their family.
That's beautiful, man. Very mission driven and very touching, man. It's awesome. I would love to know a little bit, if you were to give us just maybe a 90-second answer or some value in that, what can someone do right now to help, I guess, defend themselves with their words without having to resort to violence or defend themselves better? What's some advice you'd give them?
If someone is accusing you of something or has a gossip about someone you love or to you, use our jab, cross, hook combo, which is our verbal blocks, and they're questions. So questions are the middle ground between fighting and avoiding. So the first question is, what do you mean by that? So someone says, oh, Lewis, so-and-so was doing drugs the other day. He's like, what do you mean by that? And what that does is puts the onus back on the person who made the claim.
Yeah.
The second one is, can you give me some proof? And they have to reveal their source.
Yeah.
And the third one is, how do you know it's true? How do you know personally it's true?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, bring about the personal experience, and then make a conclusion. So it seems like it's not really conclusive. It seems like that's just a rumor. It seems like you might have something against this person. And that's how you can verbally defend yourself and other people when this is untrue, unexamined things being thrown around.
Beautiful tip, man. Really beautiful. If you were to write a book, and we'll get into the end now, but if you were to write a book and you could only leave 3 lessons to pass on to the world, what would those 3 lessons be?
Question everything.
Good answer.
Be the guide, not the hero.
Beautiful.
Don't drink the water. I'm just joking. And think is need to do and do is need to think.
Can you expand on that? Because that was obviously in the intro as well. What do you mean by that?
In my view, there's probably like extra versions of this, but there's thinkers and there's doers. There's thinkers and then there's doers. I'm a doer. So doers don't need to have a full plan before they start. They can start with a thought from a feeling and they just go for it. And they've built, they build things, they create things, they start businesses without much info. And, you know, the pros of that is you're getting results quick, you're learning quick, you're not being held back by procrastination. The cons are you can dive in head first into shallow water and snap your neck because you haven't thought it through. No. So I was a doer. So sometimes the tendency with doers is you do too much at once. And that's definitely a tendency some doers have. But at the same time, we all envy the doers because it's about action, not just about talking. So I think that's one end of the spectrum. But doers need to think. So some people, doers are hard workers, but if you're not smart about it, you're doing things twice or three times and knocking down and building up. Thinkers, they really examine everything. You know, they do their research, they talk about things, they like testing pros and cons, and they would have a good plan and they have a lot of depth.
Yeah.
But they don't have a lot to show for it in terms of tangible things from that knowledge. So they need to do. They actually need to be more like the doers, and the doers need to be more like the thinkers. And then you have smart work and hard work in the middle. And I think that's what I mean by doers need to think and thinkers need to do.
I really enjoy this podcast, man. You've got so much depth and wisdom to you, and not just the marketing guy. It's there's so much more to you, which is beautiful. If people wanted to connect with you, if they wanted to do business with you, if they just wanted to say thank you for the wisdom today, where's the best place they can find you?
They find me mostly on Instagram, just Matt Purcell Official. And just drop a DM or visit the website. Love to have a chat.
Epic, man. Last question before we wrap it up. What is something that you are working on a personal level that the world doesn't get to see?
It's a great question. Working on a rites of passage.
What do you mean?
Working on a rites of passage for my kids and the future of my kids. And for someone that if they want to use it for their kids, that's great. It's an exercise that I recognize that doesn't really exist. There's a great group called, I think they're in Adelaide. They're called, I can't remember what they're called actually, but they've tapped into this and it's a huge movement. But I love the idea that no one really knows in Australia when you become an adult. They say, oh, 18. It's like, well, when you turn 18, you still have to wait till you're 24 before you're considered, your insurance premium still higher than 24-year-olds because you still is a risk. So when do you go from being in a child to a teenager or 13? I was like, okay, Hoyt says that, or airplane tickets or even menus say if you're 12 and under, you're a kid. Yeah. So who tells you you're a kid? Well, restaurants tell you. Movies tell you, airplanes tell you. I mean, it's so confusing. I'm on an airplane and a kid costs the same amount as an adult over the age of two. So what metrics or what like actions help you know when you've become an adult? And we've got things in Australia, it's like you can drink, you can drive. That's pretty much it, your driver's license. And I just think it does very little for your morality or for your character. I mean, we've had so many great cultures in history that have said like this, and when you hit the age of eight, you become a squire and you learn about war and chess and you learn about the code of a knight, and then you become a page, which you keep increasing with the code of a knight, and then you eventually become a knight. And it became this expectation. Kids look forward to growing up and kids were given adult responsibilities, which we call adult responsibilities, but they look forward to that. They wanted it, helped people become a responsible society. There's a bit of a rant, but I'm just saying,
I love it, man.
I just don't think it's clear in Australian culture if we have a real good culture. Like a strong, it's not a, we have Asian, Chinese have a really big tradition with things, Koreans have traditions with things, the Greeks did, the Romans did, but Australia, we're just like, you don't really have a rites of passage. It's like alcohol. Driver's license. What a shame.
Yeah.
Shouldn't we have something more character driven to show bravery? So that's what I'm working on that no one really knows about.
Thank you, man. That was a beautiful share. Man, thank you for your time. I've really enjoyed this this podcast, brother. Thank you for being here.
No worries, man.